Welcome to Sex with Simmery. Frank, occasionally explicit edutainment on the most important topic of all. Sex with Simmery is not intended for children and is not safe for work unless your boss is particularly awesome. See more at sexwithsimmery.com.
Welcome to Sex with Simmery. I am ecstatic to have today's guest on because he is not only super awesome, but he's also a friend. And he's also going to be speaking at the upcoming Slut Walk. So my personal favorite project to talk about right now. So please welcome Key Alexander.
Awesome. Hey.
Yes. All right. So, Key, we are currently recording this in the Mazzoni Center, where you are the community health educator.
Yes. Yes, I am.
Explain to the people what any of those words mean.
Yeah, right. So, Mazzoni Center is in this awesome LGBT health and wellness center in Philadelphia. And I am the community health educator, which means I teach the youngins about the health. So... Basically, it's really awesome. I'm basically teach sex ed within public schools, public and charter schools. So any school can bring me in, call, say, hey, we want to do this. We have a workshop series that I present, and we talk about everything that has to do with sexuality, relationships, anatomy, self-esteem, birth control, reproduction, HIV, STDs, sexual and gender identity, which I think is super important, and sexual media literacy that you... You know, I came to you to help me out with that, and that was really awesome. So we're having these great conversations with kids every day. So it's really cool. I also do, like, LGBT and, like, trans specifically 101s, sensitivity trainings, anything that has to do with youth and education piece, that's all me. So that's what I do.
And the Mazzoni Center overall, what is the goal of the Mazzoni Center?
So the goal of Mazzoni Center is really to help LGBT identified individuals with, you know, their health across their lifespan. So we are largely an HIV service organization. We are the oldest HIV service provider in the state of Pennsylvania. But we, you know, our director is really kind of bringing it back to, like, total wellness. So, you know, we talk about, you know, prevention and things like that. So that's where the education piece comes in, but we also have case management for HIV positive folks, housing for HIV positive, well, housing services to help them get that. We have a food bank for HIV positive folks, and we have a youth drop-in center where we any youth can come in on Wednesday nights and get any medical service they need. They don't need an appointment, they don't need insurance, just whatever they need. And we also just, we help a lot of trans folks specifically with access to services, hormones, things like that. So we're really, we have a specific health center, and then we have, like, our other building where we do, like, a prevention work. We have behavioral health. We have all sorts of things. So it's really just helping folks get every, their kind of whole well-being care and a place that affirms their identity.
So that's really interesting. Cool. And then, so... When you come here for health services, like, what is different about health services for somebody who's LGBT mm-hmm. versus going to, like, some other kind of clinic?
Totally. I think the big thing is a lot of times LGBT folks are afraid to go to the doctor because they're afraid of, like, the kind of misconceptions or assumptions people put on them. So, you know, going to the doctor and saying, hey, you know, people are like, well, what are your sexual practices? And someone, like, even being afraid to say, well, actually, like, I'm gay or I'm lesbian or I'm trans and I sleep with these folks, I do these things, and people being, and, like, assuming things and saying, oh, you know, I think a lot of times people walk in and people assume they're straight. They're assumed that they're having sex a certain way. And it's really important for people to just be able to, like, no, I do this, I don't do this, these are the people I sleep with, blah, 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 and have that be okay. And that's also, like, really influences how I do my education work, because when I teach these kids about sex, I'm not just saying, oh, penis and vagina, and this is how it goes. Like, I'm saying, like, everybody has sex different. Even straight folks have sex differently than we would assume they would. And so it's important that everybody knows that there's a different way to protect yourself for different people and different things. And that's cool, you know? And I think it's really good in that health sense to get, you know, people to, because I feel like people aren't honest about their health. You know, they go to the doctor and they lie. They're like, oh, I don't really smoke that many cigarettes. And I, you know, I'm always using protection. I'm da 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 da. And it's, like, cool to have a place where it's like, we're going to meet you where you are at. And, like, we want you to be honest so that you take care of yourself.
And can anybody come to the Mazzoni?
In terms of, like, with our HIV services, you don't have to be LGBT identified, but most of our HIV positive folks that we do serve are LGBT identified. Our behavioral health, you do have to be LGBT identified, but that's really because there's really not many spaces in terms of like behavioral health where people can go and like people not assume things or tell them to do certain things a certain way because of their, you know, their LGBT identity. And then in terms of like, our youth drop-in, like anybody can go in. We usually get a lot of homeless kids usually because they're the folks who don't have access to services. So we make sure that, you know, a lot of folks get in and have those services, and that's really important. So yeah, for the most part, like, you know, and it's also interesting because like now, like all these like queer folks are like, yeah, I want to go to Missoni. I want to do this, da, 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 da. And it's like, you know, we're still small. So we're still constantly growing, and like our health center is like packed with folks, but we're constantly looking at ways to expand so that we can serve more people.
Like, how big is it? Like, how many people work here? How many people come through here?
We're big. We're like, we're pretty much, in terms of like LGBT focused health, we're one of the biggest organizations in the nation. You know, there's like some, you know, New York, San Francisco, those big cities have other big health centers. So for Philly, we're really huge. We're the only people who do the kind of work that we do in Philly specifically. We have about 90 or so folks on staff full time.
That's pretty impressive.
And we have some interns and part-time folks. Yeah, so we're pretty big for a nonprofit. We have, you know, staff meetings with the whole entire staff once a month. And we go over to Jefferson and we like fill up a lecture hall, you know, but it's pretty cool. So it's like everybody kind of knows each other. And even though we have different sites, you know, we constantly have things that like, you know, we all check back together, and there's a lot of communication within that. So,
and in your community health education work, so is the majority like public school, mm-hmm. or and what kind of age level? Who are you talking to?
Yeah, it's mostly public school, mostly high school, which is really really fun. It's always a doozy, but it's always super fun. I also do middle schools, I think as young as sixth grade. And I've also done some adult work too, which has been really cool. But the bulk of my work is within high schools. And it's largely, you know, Philly public schools that don't have, you know, a lot of access to services, because all our services are free, the education services that we have. So, you know, people are like, you know, I really want the sex ed, but we can't pay you. And I'm like, I'm going to be there because you don't need to pay us, you know, which is really cool. So I end up reaching like primarily a lot of youth of color, who in low economic, you know, status neighborhoods, who don't have a lot of access to stuff, and, you know, kids that are, you know, want the information about their sexual health and just don't have anywhere to go to get it. And so it's been really valuable for helping to see these kids like say that they want this information, get this information, and learn how to protect themselves in a better way. I think it's funny because when I tell people what I do for a living, they're like, oh my God, you teach kids about sex? Like, you can't do that. Like, da da da. And I was like, you know, my job's not to tell these kids whether they should have sex or not, you know? Like, because whatever I say, they're going to do what they want to do. You know, my job is to give them the information so they can make healthy decisions and feel like they're making decisions to feel right for them and when they're ready for them, and to protect themselves accordingly. And I think it's important to have those conversations for sure.
When you come into work with kids, is it like one time shot, you teach them a lesson and then you disappear, or do you work with them continuously so you can see an evolution?
Yeah, it's a little hard. So it's kind of a combination of both. So we have a workshop series that's got six different workshops in it, and I will come and do the whole series. So I'll usually come like once a week for 6 weeks. And so therefore, like I have this short period of time and they get to see me a couple times. So they get used to me, but I'm also far enough removed that like they can ask me all sorts of questions that they wouldn't necessarily ask their teacher that they see every day. So it's a cool system like that where, you know, we kind of establish a rapport, but it's also like a distance for them to feel like they can, you know, ask and be comfortable without like being judged or reminded every day. And it's funny because I run into my students all the time around the city, you know, because I always use public transportation to get from where I gotta go. So I'll walk down the street and see people, oh, it's the sex guy. Remember that guy? Like, or like, hey, Mr. Sex Man. Or, you know, one school they called me the Vajayjay Man. And I was just like, awesome, you know, like, so things like that. So that's really cool. But we also like kind of then establish relationships with schools. And so they'll like bring me back and like I'll do, you know, I've had certain schools that I'll be at all year because I'll work with one group of students, and then when that session's over, they'll give me another group, and so that I'm constantly like in that school and the teachers know me and stuff like that. So that's pretty cool how that works out.
I'm ecstatic that you are the one talking to kids about this stuff, but I am curious about, is this the end of like the school-based sex educator, like somebody whose job it is, like a health ed teacher mm-hmm. or something like that?
I hope not, because I feel like it's really important to make sure that there's sex ed with inside the schools. And a lot of times when I do come in, I come in through health classes. So they'll have a health teacher that'll bring me in. But in terms of like resources and budget cuts and time management and like programs getting cut left and right, like health is like not become a priority anymore, unfortunately. And so like they'll still have health classes, but then they'll have like, these are the core concepts we got to hit, you know, and sexuality is not in there. You know, that's always something that people are like, oh, well, and it's still becoming a moral issue. You know, a lot of people are like, oh, well, that should be held at home so we can cut that out at school.
So what health issues are more important? What is being prioritized?
I don't know. You know, the skeletory system is really popular, you know, like, you know, things like, you know, they're doing basic like nutrition stuff. And I feel like that nutrition that's, stuff is really, really important. And I wish they put more time into that. So I guess the basic is kind of like phys ed type of stuff, nutrition, exercise, like knowing how your body is in that sense. So it's like, okay, things that we definitely need, but there's also this point where like we're recognizing that, you know, kids are having sex younger and younger. So it's like something that we need to talk about in that setting. And I just feel like people are still kind of feeling iffy, like, you know, and especially in communities of color that I've noticed, that like, we just don't talk about sex. Like, that's just not something you talk about your family with. So they're expecting, like, the school's expecting for you to learn it at home, and home's learning, expecting for you to learn it at school. So it's like, then people fall between the cracks. Like, I've been to schools where I was working at a Latino charter school that was, like, really great to work at because, you know, I identify as Latino, so it was really awesome to, like, work with these kids and be in this space. But they really didn't want me to be there for the longest time. Like, they were just like, you can't talk about this to our kids. They wanted me to split them up, boys and girls. And I was like, that's not okay. You know, like, we can't do that. And there was a lot of resistance. And finally, I had to, like, once I showed my face and say, I really want to do this program at this school, I really want this to happen. I had a friend who was a school nurse at one of the schools, and she pushed for it too. And they were finally like, oh, okay. And it went over well. And then it kind of like established trust. But that's one of the major barriers, is kind of like, you know, people don't want to talk about it. They don't want to have that conversation.
I actually want to ask a little bit more about the difference between a dividing a class by gender and keeping it all together. Yeah. What do you have to say about that?
Oh, I'm always keep them together, because I feel like boys and girls should learn both about, you know, about their bodies, how people, you know, change and grow. And I feel like, especially for me as a trans person, like, I really wish that I would have had sex ed where it was combined together, because if I would have knew the things that happened to boys in puberty, like, I probably would have rethought some things, you know, like, I probably would have approached it a little bit different, you know. And, you know, just not knowing, and the same thing with, you know, young trans women who are like, you know, they don't get taught what happens to girls through puberty and what that happens. So they have no way to kind of like deal with that once they go through puberty again. And so that's like from like a queer perspective, but it's also just like a way for folks to feel empowered and feel safe. Especially like, you know, people are saying, well, why does a little girl need to learn how to put on a male condom? And it's just like, well, you know, if someone gives her some excuse, like, I don't know how to put a condom on, I don't really need that, da 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 da, you know, she'll be able to know how to put. She's like, actually, well, I do, so we can still do this and we can have this conversation. It's a way for folks to protect themselves, especially from a feminist perspective of young girls, because I feel like young girls don't get talked to about sex the way young boys do. I think it's just really important to have that information and also just dispel myths amongst each other, you know, because kids say all sorts of things about sex. And so if they're getting the correct information, you know, they can educate, you know, each other. And I think that's really important.
And that's that point in and of itself, that the idea that you should know about equipment that you don't have.
Totally.
And even in a culture, if the presumption was heterosexuality, that's still going to become relevant to you at some point, totally. Even if it's not supposed to be today.
Yeah.
But the idea that you would withhold, like, medically necessary information and also just basic like owner's manual information.
Yeah.
Like that would be withheld for like a moral reason. Like I still am always encountering somebody who has like a different story about how they didn't even know what was going on between their own legs.
Yeah.
So you can imagine the level of lack of knowledge about anybody else.
Yeah, totally.
In their situation. So when you're encountering these schools and there's less and less emphasis on any education really, but with sex ed especially being squished out, what is the level of understanding when you get there? Like, what do people already know?
It can be all over the place. It's interesting because a lot of times, a lot of these kids speak about their knowledge about sex from their own experiences or experiences that they've heard from their peers, which are usually have no validity whatsoever, you know? So they're just like, well, I heard this random thing about, like, if you have sex with this person, you're going to get HIV. And it's just like, whoa, where did that come from, you know? So a lot of these kids either talk about what they learn in the media, what they're learning from their peers, what they're learning from their own sexual experiences. And, you know, a lot of times I work with ninth grade because they usually have health in ninth grade, which is also problematic because I feel like the things that you need to think about your health in ninth grade differ by the time you graduate and it should be revisited. But, that's a whole nother story. But I feel like, you know, some of these kids will go in and they, you know, they don't know any parts of like that the penis is actually called the penis, you know, like things like that. Like some places they just, all their learning of sex has been colloquial and like slang and just like learning from each other. So like to teach even like the proper parts of the body, you know, sometimes it takes longer at some places than others because these kids just never were taught that, you know. And so the levels can be varying. And then, you know, depending on if these kids are sexually active, and a lot of them are, I mean, that it then becomes this matter of like, well, I had this in my experience and kind of like telling them, well, this, you might have some misinformation about that, but that doesn't devalue your experience. So it's also kind of tricky to like see how they do that. And it's also interesting because like I'm pretty young. And so like when I walk into schools, a lot of times, half the times people think I'm a student. So when I do have these conversations with these kids kind of ask me questions about my own sexual experiences and being like, well, when did you lose your virginity? Or like, you know, how often do you have sex and things like that? Like trying to look for specific answers. And it's just, it always kind of like, when I first started doing this work, it really threw me off. I was like, that's not appropriate, you know, but also kind of being like, well, there's a reason why they don't want to know this question and kind of like addressing that and like kind of flipping that. And so depending on the range of experience, they could be asking all sorts of things. So
how much do you talk about your personal experience?
It depends. It depends like where I am, what I'm talking about specifically. I feel like I'm a lot more open than most folks about sharing sexual experiences. And that's just because I like to normalize things for people, especially when I'm working with queer youth. Like usually when I work with queer youth, I'm talking about all sorts of things because I want them to know that like you can still be a healthy, full functioning adult and like have these wants and desires and experiences and that a lot of people tell you that you're not supposed to have. And so I think it's important to kind of like, and I also think it's important not to be like, I'm giving you this information and that's what I said, take it. You know, because it's like really a lot of times they ask those questions because they're like, are you doing what you're teaching me? You know, they're like, do you use a condom every time? And, you know, I'm just like, and so I'd have to be like, yeah, you know, with my partner, we do this, or like, you know, or the fact that like, oh, yeah, sometimes people are in open relationships, or, you know, some straight folks have sex this way, da 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 da, and like people do different things. And so I like to kind of keep it like tell my story and kind of keep it neutral. My favorite though is like when like I'll say like, oh, well, my ex-girlfriend blah 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 or something, and they'll be like, oh, so you are straight. And then I'd be like, what's the question you're asking me? They're like, oh, do you have a girlfriend? And I was like, yeah. And they're like, so you are straight? And I'm just like, no, you asked if I had a girlfriend, you didn't ask if I was straight. Those are two different things.
And then their heads explode. Yeah.
Totally. They're like, wait, what, blah, blah. So you're bisexual? And I'm just like, well, bisexual only implies that there's only two genders, so no. And they're like, wait, blah, ah, ah. And so then I usually have to draw the line somewhere in there because I was like, this is not a class on queer theory, you know, like, so it's interesting. I don't usually tell my trans status unless it becomes something that's relevant. Like, I've had kids be like, I usually have an information sheet that they have to fill out, just in terms of like keeping track of numbers and stuff. And on there it has, you know, like gender, and it says like male, female, trans, F to M, trans, M to F. And, you know, I have kids be like, what the hell is this? And I'm like, well, people who are transgender. What the fuck is that? Well, someone who's transgender is da da da. That shit's nasty. You know, and being like, you know, you should really be careful about the words you say because you really don't know who you're in the company of. And I've had kids been like, why are you transgender? And like have to be like, yeah. And then be like, oh. You know, like, yeah. And being like, wait, but I didn't think a transgender person looked like that, like that kind of thing. And yeah. Like, so I've gone in these spaces where I also recognize that, like, for other people that may be unsafe, but for me, like, being a trans man and like having male privilege, like part of my privilege is that like I pass without question. So I feel like it's important for me to like put myself out there when it's in terms of like, you know, I could yell at someone for saying, you know, transphobic things, but if there's no relevance behind it, like, what's the point, you know? So I often kind of like put that out there, but it's hard because then sometimes they make it about me. Then they're like, oh, well then did this happen to you? Da, 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 you know? And I'm kind of like, well, this lesson's not about me. This is about the material. So it depends on the situation, but I feel like I've definitely had instances where I've told parts of my identity and parts of my sex life that, like, you know, with keeping it kosher, you know, I'm not going to be like, yeah, I fucked the shit out of this. Like, it's not going to happen like that, you know? I think it's really important to, like, recognize the difference. But saying that, yeah, some people have sex this way and that's cool, totally, you know? So that's, those are the conversations I have.
And does the nature of those conversations where it starts being a little bit more about you, do you think that that lets kids integrate more of the information, like, because it's more of a conversation, or do you think that it distances them and they think that it's less about them because that's not their experience?
I think it could be a little bit of both. I think it's interesting because I think a lot of times for young folks, they like to see a face with the thing that they're learning about. And so to give them a visual and say, like, look, this is what this looks like, and to challenge what their preconceived notion was, I think is really important. But you're right, like, in terms of, like, distancing, and so they're like, well, this doesn't apply to me, so I don't have to listen. And I like to carve things in terms of conversations because of that. Like, when I do sexual and gender identity, it's not the typical, like, LGBT 101 is like, what is gay? Like, da da da. Like, what I do is I start a conversation about identity. So I have one of the activities that I really like to do is having different identities across on the wall, like around the room. So I'll have like age and race, gender, class, ability, sexual orientation, and things like that. And I'll have them posted around the room. And I say to folks, you have to pick the things that are most important to your identity. And you can only pick three, and you have to go and sign your name like under it. And so they go around and they say why they picked what they picked, you know. And they'll say, well, you know, I picked being young, brown, and straight because those things are important. And kind of talking about conversation in that way. And then saying, well, how do you feel when people make assumptions about your identity? And then they're like, oh, well, I really hate it because they don't know me. And that really pisses me off. And, like, it gets me angry to the point where, like, I want to confront them, blah, 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 blah. And so you get this kind of personal tie of, like, okay, so you know that you're defensive about, you know, being young, you know, and you don't want people to talk bad about you. So then we go up into that conversation and say, okay, well, we recognize how that makes us feel when we do this. So then, you know, someone's not going to call you the N-word, so why is it okay to call somebody a fag, you know? Or, like, someone's not going to call, you know, make a really bad joke about, like, Muslim folks, but they're going to call somebody a dyke. Like, what's up with that? And, like, having that conversation like that and kind of always reflecting it back to, okay, but what if I said this to you? How would you make that make you feel, you know? And kind of, like, dismantling it like that. And then that makes the conversation easier for me to say, well, this is what it means when someone is gay. This is what it means when someone's lesbian. So that makes a little bit more sense. So I like to make it sure that it's always relevant to them, even if it's not their direct experience. It's either their friend or their parents or their family or someone they go to school with, someone that they share space with. So I think that's really important.
This is reminding me of, this is possibly tangent, but a friend of mine posted their experience on Facebook. It was in a status that they just moved into a new neighborhood and that they had some neighbors that I guess were kind of bullies and like engaged this person by calling them out on. See, I just want to keep it really generic so to phrase this properly, they called this person out by like the derogatory names that you would call them of their identifying, you know, situation. And it escalated to the point where this person called them back by the words that would be most derogatory to their group. Mm. And then my question is like, you know, is that okay? Is that like the one time that that's allowed? Or is that like the time when you especially should not do that? Mm. And like, are there ones that, is there an order? You get to say one and that one gets said, then you can say the others.
Yeah, like, yeah. I feel like it's important to like talk about like, you know, we shouldn't be calling people out regardless, right? And I think that, and that's the thing, is people are like, well, he said that to me first, and so I was defending my thing. And, like, kind of, like, talking about, well, why are we saying those words in the first place, right? And, like, what is it, like, what are we trying to really accomplish by me calling you out? And, like, you know, if I walk up to this white person and I call you a cracker, like, why am I trying to, what does that have to do with me? And that, you know, that could be my own insecurity, that can be my own thing, da-da-da-da. And, like, really addressing those things, because that happens in class all the time. The kids are like, oh, well, I get on kids who are saying, like, you know, stop saying that's so gay. You know, like, what does that have to do with anything? Like, stop being so happy. Like, stop being so fabulous. Like, gay people are awesome. So why are you, like, you know? And they're like, oh, well, you know, but they try to insult me. So that was what I came back with it. And it was just kind of like, all right, but what happens if, like, and I was like, but you do realize that you control the word, you control the power of the words that are said to you. So if someone calls you this, that, and the other, if that means nothing to you, then you keep it moving. But if you are letting it bother you, then you're going to react, blah, 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 blah. So it's really like you have the power of those words. And I think, and that's why I always like, my sex ed classes are not like other people's sex ed classes, because I'm always having conversations with these kids. We talk about other random things that don't directly have to do with sex, but I'm always like, and this is how it can affect your sex life. This is how it can affect your interpersonal relationships. You know, this is kind of, it can affect your own identity formation, you know? And I think that's like, kids never get the space to have those conversations and like call them out, you know?
I mean, there's so many major life experiences that there's never really any preparation for. How do you break up with somebody?
Yeah.
How the hell do you either let someone down gently and explain, you know, without using cliches, it's not you, it's me. And like, it's, we always end up using the same crap, or like, I just need time, I need space. And most of these things are completely false. And the reality is that we have very little training on expressing these things in an honest, direct way, so that it doesn't become a drag out, like texting each other back and forth for the next 4 months because nobody really knows what's up.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, where's the healthy relationships training so that when you go see the movie Twilight, you're like, he's a stalker.
Yeah.
It's not okay. Like, the problem's not that he's too sensitive. The problem's not that he's not violent enough. The problem is that he's a stalker. It's not okay.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Yeah, I think, and that's something that we strive to do. And I feel like I constantly think that this work is evolving. Like, I'm never like, oh, I never do the same workshop twice, ever. Because you get different people, different energy, different activities, different groups have different needs. And so I always try to, like, you know, address that and kind of being like, okay, well, this group, this, you know, what's going to work on breaking up for them is going to be different than this group. And like, what really is about, like, you know, taking care of yourself and self-care. I'm really big on self-care and like talking about that, especially when talking about your sexual health. And so it's like, do what's right for you, because a lot of times, like, well, I don't want to break up with her because I get these perks and I have sex and I da 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 da. And like, and I was like, but that's besides the point, because you know you're not happy. So why are you doing those things? I don't know. I might not directly answer your question that you said, but, yeah, because I wish someone would have gave me a manual and said, this is relationship 101. This is how you do it. So when she starts acting crazy, you say something like that. And when you start acting really brand new, you check yourself on that, you know, no one talks about those things.
So even outside of the Mazzoni, you do a lot of work with young people, and you consider yourself an LGBT activist and an advocate for youth. Like, you want to talk about that a little bit?
Totally. So I feel like one of the things that I really do love about Mazzoni is that, like, I kind of can carry that work into, like, my everyday life. And so my work, I kind of, like, eat, breathe, and sleep my work in this way that's, like, not, like, my 9-to-5, but, like, the other things that I do are all around, like, LGBT issues. So I run I help co-facilitate a trans youth group at the local LGBT center, The Attic, called Young Trans and Unified, which is really awesome. We got a good group of young folks, 13 to 23, who are all trans, gender variant, questioning their gender queer, just kind of not playing with the box, like doing whatever, and it's just an open space for that. And that's been really, really valuable, just like seeing these kids and becoming a support system for them. And just like, because I wish someone would have told me, you know, this is where you go to get these resources. This is how you take care of yourself. You need to stop doing these things if you want to take on these things. And just kind of like, I feel like it's like mini life coaching, you know, being like, these are the mistakes I made when I was 17. Don't do that. You know, I wish I had someone to do that. So it really feels good for me to be able to do that to these folks, especially in, and something we often talk about is, we do workshops within this space. We meet once a week, at The Attic, and we always do workshops on different things. And, you know, one of the workshops we did was about, was we had someone from Screw Smart come in and talk about porn and talk about porn literacy, though, you know, and talking about like how these things can be empowering, and the reason why some people watch porn is because they want to see images of themselves and things like that. And like to give these like youth a space to talk about sex, because it's like no one talks about how you have sex with trans folks, you know, like you don't know how that's supposed to change, what that's supposed to be like, how you can protect yourself because your needs are going to be different. And that's something that's really important to me, is giving folks those space to like have those conversations they can't have other places. So that's been really, really awesome. And then just, I've been, you know, really blessed with different opportunities to kind of speak on like my ideals. And I'm going to be speaking at the Slut Walk, which I'm really, really excited about. Yeah, I'm like, and they asked me to speak, and I was just like, oh my God, yes, like, yes, you know. And one of the things they want me to speak about is like sexual assault, especially pertaining to the LGBT community, especially with trans folks. And, you know, I've been constantly thinking about it every day. I'm still like writing my speech kind of, and really kind of talking about like how sexual assault like can look different in our community, but also like perpetuate transphobia and, you know, misogyny in ways that we didn't think and we didn't expect.
Can you elaborate on that?
I have this one story stuck in my brain about a young person that I worked with. I was doing a trans training for a group of young folks, and I had this, you know, young male identified male bodied person, you know, say, you know, a woman is supposed to do this and a man is supposed to do that, and that's what it is, and that's it, you know, and kind of taking up a lot of space and being very like, And then, you know, also made the comment, well, like, oh, well, if you're going to be trans or whatever and you're going to do that, then you have to go all the way. And you have to, you know, if you're going to be a woman, then you got to look like that. You can't half-ass it, da-da-da-da. And just really kind of like making assumptions about what trans should look like. And I was just kind of like, you know, all right, like I see this person, you know, taking up a lot of space. But then it kind of got to this hostile space where he was just taking up a lot of space, trying to shut other people down. And I had to be like, look, like, you know, you can have your opinion. It's okay, da da da. But you need to really not like break up the rest of the space and inhibit other people from learning. I later found out that this young individual had previously identified as trans, as a trans woman, and had been incarcerated. And, you know, when you get locked up, you get assigned where your birth gender is, and, you know, got put in a male prison and was like really horribly raped, and then came back and was never the same, you know, and just constantly from that, like, he basically got scared out of being trans and like literally like assaulted into like this thought that he was so wrong. And his family kind of like perpetuated this idea that, you know, that, you know, that's why this happened to you, that kind of thing. And like, if you get sick, that's because you were doing that. If you're doing, you know, all this stuff, and just really put in and gave his whole worldview a very like transphobic, misogynist view, you know. And like, that's something like we don't think about, like how transphobia is perpetuated in that sense, and how this like person who is inside the community can be really taken out of it because of an assault that wasn't, you know, because he was overly feminine while he was there, you know, things like that. So I think it's really interesting to think about, you know, how you know, how we think about assault and how especially trans women get a lot of shit constantly and are sexually assaulted, and a lot of women are, you know, are forced to do sex work and things like that, and are assaulted and not accountable because, and people are not being held accountable because of the nature of their work or of, you know, their status, and saying, I'm not, you shouldn't have been out there anyways because you're lying to people because you're really a man, so you deserve whatever you get, you know, and just really disrespecting people's identities. And I think it's important to have that conversation about, especially trans folks of color, like when we have these conversations about how sexual assault is affecting women, they're not at the table. And so I think that I really am really thankful that they gave me this opportunity to like kind of speak for a community that really can't speak for itself. And I also recognize that I'm a trans man, so like that's not my experience. But, you know, also talking about like as a trans man, my biggest fear in transitioning was getting raped, you know, by like, you know, a group of guys finding out my trans status and then being like, oh, well, you're not really a dude. And going from there, you know, it's like boys don't cry gone horrible wrong, you know, but also recognizing that because I present as male, my chances of getting sexually assaulted drop dramatically, you know, and like being responsible for that. And so we don't, you know, to think about how we can think about the conversation of sexual assault in those terms and how it can be a really fear for people that we don't think it's a fear for.
I actually do want to just ask you, when you transitioned, did you find your experience of like just walking the street at night to be any different, the way that people approached you or did not approach you?
I felt it was, people immediately started interacting with me in a very different way, in a way that I didn't anticipate, in a way that I don't always particularly like. But yes, walking down the street, I realized that, you know, I'm being read a very particular way. So people kind of stay out of their way because it's like, you know, I'm a brown man walking down the street in this neighborhood full of brown men, so it looks like I belong there, you know. And also recognizing that, like, you know, I have to take the time. I have a lot of female friends. I went to an all-women's college, so I have a lot of women for friends. And when they leave my house, I should probably walk them to the bus stop. I should probably wait until they get on the bus for them before, you know, and things like that. And this new kind of responsibility that comes with that. I wasn't really afraid of, when I was female identified, because I was butch, quote unquote. So like I was never really afraid of that because I felt like, you know, if guys gave me trouble, it's like at the end of the day, we like the same thing. Right. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, you know, it's cool. You know, I like girls, you like girls. It's all good. You should leave me alone. You know, that kind of thing. But then being read as male, it's like kind of people are just like, you know, they stay in their lane. You don't really talk. It's also interesting, though, because as I started to transition, like, I'm being read as, like, I realize that I'm more effeminate now, and so I'm being read as, like, a gay man, and so that also poses, like, this other type of threat that I did not anticipate. So, like, you know, whereas in, like, it's cool, like, if I'm wearing baggy pants and, you know, a sweatshirt, I'm walking down the street, no one's going to fuck with me. But if I'm, you know, going to the club with my friends and I'm in my skinny jeans and my V-neck shirt, you know, people are going to, like, call me a fag while I'm walking down the street. So it's, like, interesting, like, how those things get played out. And they're very different fears, you know, like, the fear of, like, being accosted and, like, assaulted, like, as a woman looks very different, like, what that looks like as a man. So it's all very interesting.
That is. And then does it change the way that, like, women look at you when they cross the street? Mm-hmm. Like, do they see you as more of a threat or something now than they used to?
Yeah, I think a lot of times, you know, I have to remember that, like, when I walk past the street, and even though I'm really nice, when you start to have a conversation with me, if you don't look at me, you just think I'm some other dude, like, you know, with a mean mug on his face walking around, you know. And it was funny because my partner, who's also trans, he always makes it a point to say, pardon me, when he walks past women at night, and like let them know that he's there, to say, like, I don't want you to think I'm sneaking up on you. I want you to know that, like, I see you in this space, and that I'm excusing myself from your space. And I until he said something about it, I was like, always like, whoa, why are you always, you know? But then recognizing that can make a world of difference for a woman, and knowing that I definitely would have appreciated that if people did that when I was female identified.
Yeah, that just blew my mind. I mean, the amount of effort that that takes to always sustain the level of attention to make sure that you say it to every single person you see. But coming from the Midwest, where people greet each other when they pass the street, like that's just what you do, whether you know each other or not. If you didn't, that would seem very out of place where I'm from. And then I moved to the city where if you speak to someone on the street, you clearly want something from them. And the question is, what do they want? And if it's a girl, like I must clearly be trying to like solicit something or get help or something. I must want something from them. And I really hated having to shut down that part of me that was so intrinsic, and I felt like it was very polite, but I found that it became like a safety issue. Like if I had tried to strike up conversations with strangers by even just saying hi or smiling, it kind of became a thing. And then it makes me sad, because then if someone shows interest in me, I have learned to circumvent that part. They're like, oh, they're friendly, and now I have to go to the blinders, just keep walking, ignore them, they want money or something, and having to dodge people, and it's sad.
It's totally sad. I think it's interesting because Philly has a really interesting dynamic where like it's very neighborhoody, and I felt like when I like I remember when I first moved to Philly, in my particular neighborhood, you know, everybody kind of stay in your lane. You don't really talk to anybody. But then you see the same people. And then they start to say hello. Right? And they'd say, how you doing? And that's like a big thing. I feel like people are always saying, how you doing in Philly, right? And it became to this part where it was like, okay, now you know the people in the neighborhood. So if you don't say how you doing, some shit's up. But also if people aren't saying how you doing, that means that they don't belong there. Right? And so kind of like this, how people navigate space. And I think it's just so interesting navigating that space, like as a woman before, and then navigating similar spaces as a man. And that like they expect certain things when you, when you're a woman, to say hello, and they expect other things, and they expect you to kind of like pound it, keep it moving as a dude. And like girls are allowed to start a conversation and what that looks like. It's just really interesting. But it also is really interesting for me to see how like young men and women interact, and like what young men think they're allowed to say to young women. And I'm just like, dude, like what did you just say to her? Like, you know, I was, there's a Chinese spot on my corner, and I was there waiting for some food. Some dude rolls in, goes to the counter, says, yo, let me get a napkin and a pen to the you know, and she's like, Chinese food, like what? And he's like, let me get a napkin and a pen. So the lady behind the counter gives him the thing. He writes down his number, starts talking to this girl, leaves, comes back, leaves again, comes back again, puts his number that's on the napkin in her purse and says, call me. And I was like, what?
Does that work?
Right? I don't know. She was just like, this dude, blah, 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 you know, like, and just thinking about like, and, you know, thinking, I was like, well, when I was on the other side, I realized that girls really don't like that, you know? So I was like, so I'm not going to do that, you know? And like recognizing like what's okay, what's not okay. And like, you know, I know that girls really can't stand when you do this, so I'm not going to do it. You know, having the inside scoop, but also recognizing that, like, when I do approach a girl, and then knowing that I'm like, okay, she'd probably like for me to say, hey, how are you doing? What's your name? Before I start this conversation. But then as a brown man, people are like, what are you doing? You must be crazy. Why are you asking for my name? You know? And so it's just like, oh. Because they're going to expect something very particular from me because they read me as male. So that's been really, really tricky. I'm just kind of like, oh, okay, you know, it's been interesting.
This is bringing up so much like personal thoughts that I've had in my head. Like I'm going through this sort of deliberation on how to interact with people on the street of a city that I don't know. And Slut Walk has especially brought this up, and especially the article by Dan Rottenberg, which we've discussed on the show before. But it was the gist of which is that women's responsibility not to do things that get them raped, you know, was the gist of what Dan Rottenberg wrote. And so now I feel like I can't display, you know, any friendliness, and perhaps even outright hostility would be safer to just give people the impression that they shouldn't even instigate, like when it's like late at night and I'm in a neighborhood that I'm not familiar with and I don't really necessarily know where I'm going. And so just like even outside this building, I had a dude who made like kissy noises, and I was like, what? And I looked at him like, what? Like, I made serious what face? And then he just gave me like the weirdest, creepiest smile as he continues to walk away from me, but with his face still entirely directed at me.
That's creepy.
I was like, I don't even know. With it, like, I can't even be offended because it's just so strange. Yeah. Like, I don't understand. Does he think he's complimenting? I don't understand. And there's no, like, handbook on this sort of thing. It's so, like, this is a clear-cut case of this guy is trying to mess with you. Yeah. It's okay to cuss him out versus this guy thinks he's being polite, but there's some sort of cultural difference that we're missing. And I just told him, no, it's cool. You can keep walking.
Yeah.
And, like, that was the end of our interaction. But... like, I don't, you know, and then like, if you're in Mexico or Italy or someplace where it's just a very different climate, you know, should we be trying to, like, subvert their paradigm and change the way people interact with each other? Yeah. Like, maybe, but it's also maybe I just don't get what it means. Mm-hmm. Maybe it doesn't mean I'm speaking to you in this way because I know I can get away with things and therefore I could get away with more things also. I don't know. It's hard to say.
Yeah, it's tough.
These are all reasons to go to Slut Walk.
It's true. It's so true. It's so true. Plus, like, a lot of wonderful people, like, being really empowering.
Yeah. Like I'm excited about this.
Totally.
So you're also involved with, in addition to the Young Trans and Unified, the Brown Boy Project.
Yes. So the Brown Boy Project is this really awesome, amazing project that's really dear to my heart. And it's a new community of masculine of center women, trans men, queer and straight men, and two-spirit folks doing work around using the privilege of masculinity to kind of, like, basically deconstruct it and, like, remake it into masculinity that's, like, rooted in honor, family and community oriented, and as well as, like, empowering to feminine folks. So, like, doing this work around masculinity for the benefit of feminine folks. So it's this really, really awesome program. It's based out of Oakland, California, and there's about 55 brown boys across the nation. And really with the program, we have the opportunity to participate in a leadership retreat where if you get accepted to the program, they fly you out to Oakland and you stay there for a week in this mansion that is, like, amazing, which is the Center for Third World Organizing, which is this amazing, beautiful space, this old Victorian mansion. You stay there for a week, and it's a lot of, like, basically how to better take care of you as a brown person, as a masculine person, how to, like, deal with your issues of, like, identity and, like, what being masculine means, what that looks like. And a lot of self-care stuff, and then how to apply that to the work that you're doing. And so they come in cohorts, like small cohorts. My cohort had about 15 folks. And from all walks of life, all doing the only thing, the thing that ties us together is that we're masculine identified people of color. And it's really, really great, transformative. I've met so many people. You know, I thought that I was going to walk in and I was going to be a bunch of nonprofit kids and we're going to do the same song and dance. No, like, I was, like, me and one other person are the only nonprofit folks. I knew some other person who did, who works specifically with homeless youth in Minnesota, homeless trans youth, people. One woman had started her own clothing line that fits, like, butch women and trans bodies. Another person who's so awesome designs her own bow ties. And then my really good friend, started a YouTube channel with her best friend called Studology 101. Shout out to Studology 101. And they started a YouTube channel and it got so big that YouTube was like, yo, we want you to do this, like, for real, for real. And Curve Magazine picked them up and they started doing some stuff and they had this movement called the We All We Got movement of LGBT folks kind of, like, you know, pulling themselves up by the bootstraps and doing stuff. And it got so huge. They have, like, people, like, tattooing their names on their body and shit. Like, it got really big, you know, but, like, using this framework of, like, talking about masculinity and, like, breaking that down and applying it to anything and everything that we do, you know? And I think it's been really, really transformative. So I've been able to do a lot of training around it, just, like, developing community. It was a really beautiful thing to be in a space full of, like, masculine people who are, like, loving, you know? I feel like a lot of times, and it kind of goes with, you know, the stuff that we were talking about, like, you know, masculinity and, like, how men are red. They're supposed to be hard. They're supposed to not care about each other. They're not supposed to love. They're just, like, you do what you got to do. And especially like in communities of color where like masculinity can be definitely hyper masculinized to this really intense way, to have these folks like loving and sharing and building together is like really powerful. So shout out to Brown Boy. They're amazing.
I feel like the only other space where men have that kind of freedom would be in some sort of religious group. Like if you were Promise Keepers, or I'm not even that familiar with Promise Keepers, if they're allowed that level of openness. But I mean, most spaces that are specifically for men, even for, you know, formation of them as strong and empowered individuals and trying to actually bring out, you know, the best in each other holistically, there's still like a lot of walls. Totally. I mean, Boy Scouts is a perfect example of a place where you could teach young men a much broader conception of how to be a good person. They're all about being prepared, but only for one real contingency.
I think, and that's something I really love about Brown Boy, because it's like, so the root was also like for masculine of center women, you know, having like butch identified, AG identified, however they identified, also to like have that space to have conversation about masculinity, because I think a lot of times people are like, well, you're a woman, so you can't have a conversation about masculinity. And it's like, but this is at the forefront of my life. But also to get a space where like other men had to be comfortable, like that makes it a really queer space, right? And so like other like cisgendered men, trans men, queer and straight, going in there and saying like, look, like we all have to do this work together. And I think that's something like you don't really get butch women and you know, cisgendered men working together on these things, you know, because they feel like, oh, it doesn't apply to both of us. But really, it's about like that thing of masculinity and really kind of preparing that like we're all going to have different paths and it's really going to be awesome and we can still be dedicated to this work. And so people have been, we started a health curriculum through Brown Boy for women in trans bodies, specifically folks of color, and how to better take care of yourself, how to support yourself and things like that. And that's been really awesome. They just presented that at the Sister Song Conference in Miami, which is a conference on reproductive justice. So, you know, all sorts of things. And yeah, the space was really valuable, but also to like, I feel much more prepared on challenging other people. Like someone asked me, like, what was the biggest benefit from that? And I feel like challenging masculinity, because I feel like when women and feminists challenge masculinity, it's like, oh, it's those women, you know, doing that thing. But from being in the inside and like being read as male and saying, no, like this misogyny shit is not okay, you know, people are like, oh, you know, or like the fact that when I give these workshops and I'm like, it's not okay to call women bitches, you know. Whoa, like that's huge for some of these young men. So like to use that work into my everyday work of like talking about sex and sexuality and like people being open about those things has been really powerful. It's given me this kind of like also a support network to kind of fall back on and say like, hey, I had trouble with this, da 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 da. This is how you can tackle that. I think it's been really valuable.
So these are lessons that are meant to apply far outside the queer community, but to masculine-identified people in general.
Yeah, totally. And then, you know, with the ultimate goal of empowering feminine folks, you know? So it's just like, we're not just doing this because we like to talk about masculinity, you know? At the end of the day, like, we need to make room for, like, our feminine-identified folks, women or men, you know? And so it's important to, like, make space for that, too.
What does that mean? Like, empower feminine-identified folks in what way?
In this way of kind of, like, you know, breaking down patriarchy, you know, saying that, like, you're not having double standards around, like, you know, how much, you know, okay, so I'll put it back into, like, my context, right? So, like, being able to talk about sex in a way that is not focused entirely on men, you know, to talk about that women have the right, or, you know, like we said, that our society teaches don't get raped, you know, and teaching don't rape, you know, as opposed to that, because that's going to be empowering to feminine folks, you know, to saying, you know, that's not, you shouldn't be doing those things. It's not that they should be avoiding it, you know, or just like how we talk about sex, how we negotiate things. You know, a lot of times I feel like these young girls are kind of like, oh, well, you know, he said he really wanted me to do this, da 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 da, like, and I'm not really sure, but if I don't do it, he's not going to like me. He's going to talk shit about me, that kind of thing. And saying, like, teaching these people, no, this is how you negotiate. You're allowed to have a conversation. You don't just, you know, make out and then the lights are out, so you assume that sex is next. Like, no, you can have a conversation. And things like that. And, like, little subtle ways that are empowering folks and allowing them to have agency in their own decisions.
So we've been talking a lot about gender. Mm-hmm. And I think that for some people, especially people who identify as, you know, they're male or they're female, and there's like no more elaboration than that, they may feel like a lot of this discussion doesn't pertain to them. But I have the feeling you have things that you could say to them to the contrary.
Totally. I think it's important because I think a lot of times, so when I use the term cisgendered, that CIS, so that's basically someone who's not transgender, so who would be, who identifies with the sex that they were born with. And so I think a lot of times people only think that transgender people have like complicated gender experiences, but I think it's like, it's really important to know that like everybody has a complicated gender experience. It's just like some people's are validated from society and others are not. So like, I think it, I always like encourage folks to think about like, how does your gender affect like, you know, how you got information, how you learned about sex? You know, a lot of times like young men will be like, oh, well, like a perfect example is like teenage pregnancy, right? And like condom use. So like young girls will be taught, you know, don't get pregnant, you know, do whatever you can to not have sex, like da 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 da, blah, blah, blah. And then young boys are like, all right, just wrap it up. Like you can do what you got to do, just wrap it up. You know, that kind of thing. So those are totally different messages, and it plays out like how we learn about sex and how we have sexual relationships totally differently. So you have to think about like how, even if you are cisgendered, like how that affects like your access to services, your access to information, how you navigate space, like how you walk down the street, how you integrate when you start dating, what does that look like? Especially like, I think it's also really complicated because people always assume that like your gender and your sexual orientation are going hand in hand, and those are like totally different, you know, and but that also transgender people can be gay and that looks different, and like what, you know, and so people are just kind of like, oh, it's all so complicated, but it's like at the end of the day, people are people and people like to get it on in different ways with different folks. So it's like, think about how your gender has, you know, like provided the information for that.
This is bringing me back to an article I posted on Sex with Timory website recently. It was written for, I think, the Huffington Post, or at least it was posted there. And it was how to talk to little girls. Mm. And the whole idea was that no matter how cute a little kid is, and no matter how much you like their hair, and no matter how cute their dress is, that hold off. Don't say it. Don't tell them that they're, you know, they're pretty, they're cute, whatever, because they very quickly learn that that's where they get their affirmation. People don't really ask them any other further questions, find out any other differentiating features. They're simply pretty or they're not.
Yeah.
And earlier and earlier and earlier, they start to get the idea that if that affirmation isn't coming, there must be something lacking, and it must be lacking in appearance. Mm-hmm. And so this article was about, you see a little girl and, you know, you just ask her like, you know, about her day or the last book she read or what's her favorite dinosaur. You know, you find out things about her as a person and just wait and just hold off and see how long you can do it. And see how hard, how surprisingly hard it is. Cause some of them are really cute.
Yeah, right.
And like right after I read this, I saw a little girl and I was just like, don't. So, hi. And then like ran out of things to say because she was just staring at me like I was weird. And I was like, so are you adventuring? Because she was randomly walking through a gym, you know, like by herself, and there's lots of questions there, but I think I'm gonna freak her out.
Totally. It's funny because this. So I watched this episode of South Park yesterday, bringing it back to South Park, and Cartman flips out, and they send him to anger management because they post a chart on the wall, and it shows like the difference of like how much they've grown over the year. So it was like Cartman grew 1.2 inches over the summer, da, 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 but they didn't say what it was. So he just assumed it was all the boys' penis size. So he's just like, how could the school post a penis size? And has this big thing to get all the boys to like remeasure their penis size and like post it up. And it's like boys' penis size. And then, you know, he's flipping out about it. So he gets sent to anger management. And then the joke is that all the people in anger management are angry because of something about their penis size not being like big enough, you know? So they're like, once they were like, does everybody here like have a problem with their penis size? And they're like, I don't know what you're talking about. And then they make this announcement where they're like, basically where they're like, okay, we're expanding the national average to average size penis. So they like make this huge big range so that everybody's in there. But then Cartman's still angry because he's little and so he doesn't make it. Right? But it's just like so funny that it was like that, like that happens like in our real world, that like people like, you know, I feel like when dudes do this thing where they're like, well, I did this last night. Well, I lifted this at the gym. Da, da, da. I call it dick swinging. And I'm just like, what? Like, really, we're going to dick swing today? Like, we're going to sit there and like try to one up each other. And it's really like this kind of like how we teach like men and boys to like to show that they're adequate, especially when it comes to like we're taught that like girls are allowed to be smart and boys shouldn't. They should be about like making decisions. And it's not about being smart or not.
Interesting.
It's just about like making decisions, being firm, and like following through with what you want to do and taking responsibility for that. It's like, so nowhere in there do you have to be smart, right? So like when people do make those decisions to like be more well informed, they're like, they try to like, you know, cut them down by these other things. So it's just really, really interesting because, yeah, I mean, the same thing that like when people ask me like, what am I good at? Some of the things that I say that I still would have said before, they're looked at differently because it's like, well, I think I'm good at dancing. And as a woman, that's great. But as a man, that's gay, you know, like, you know, and it's like, sure. But like, and, you know, and which is like, and gay's awesome. But like for them, it means, you know, that means that's not man enough, you know, and like, and guys are always, and it brings it back. I sit on a committee for the Connect to Protect program based out of CHOP and we're on this committee distribution, the condom distribution committee. So we're talking about how we're getting condoms to young folks and blah, blah, blah. And basically, you know, I've noticed that like kids will flash me condoms in their pocket to be like, look, mister, like I'm cool. Like I got a magnet in my pocket, you know? And it's just like, really? Like, and all these kids, we've been talking about all these kids are like, well, I want magnums. I want magnums. I want magnums. Because it's like, it's not about that their penis actually fits a magnum, which also makes them at higher risk if they can't fill it out. But also it's like, it's about the gold label. It's about like saying like, I have a big penis, so I need a magnum, you know? So that means I'm awesome.
It's the Gucci.
Yeah. You know? it's totally, you know? So it's just like, even as far as the like, you know, condoms, like it gets down to that, you know? And so people, you know, people are not getting protected the way they need to be, or they're just like, you know, making it about power. And I realize that's something that I've learned, like doing this sex ed work, is that for kids, it's not about intimacy anymore. It's about power. Sex is about power. So kind of like breaking that down and telling them, okay, well, if it is about power, that you still have to be responsible for that. And so like how to be responsible and what that looks like, and not just like, no, you have sex because like, you know, that song says that you should get, like, you know, money, sex, and drugs. Like, you should be having sex because you, like, you know, maybe care about somebody. You know, those kind of things.
What and, like, concepts?
Not all the times, you know? And, like, and I feel like, and I was like, that's the other thing is, like, talking about the difference between, like when you have a sexual relationship that's strictly a sexual relationship versus a romantic relationship. And for them, it's like, well, it's always going to be a sexual like relationship, and then sometimes romance. And it's like, you can have those things, but you have to be very clear about what those things are and the intention of those things. And that doesn't mean that you're disrespectful, because that's your situation that you're in. Because if you're saying that it's a relationship and it's strictly sexual to you, and for your partner it's something else, and like that's not fair. So like, and that becomes a power dynamic. Mm-hmm. So it's like talking about like being upfront about your wants and needs, and that's part of it too.
Revolutionary. What a concept. So this has been awesome. I thoroughly enjoy having conversations with you, as always, Key. So this has been Key Alexander, who is the community health educator for the Mazzoni Center, and also super awesome Philly Slut Walk guest speaker.
Yeah.
What, August 6th. What's up? Ooh, ooh.
Be there 11 a.m.
Con Park, 11th and Locust. And
Pine.
Pine.
Yeah.
What the hell am I saying? People would have ended up in the wrong city. Yeah. So also involved with, you want to give some plugs of all your groups?
Totally. Young Trends and Unified. We have a Facebook page, YTU. It's on there if you know, search Young Trends and Unified. Also the Brown Boy Project, brownboyproject.org. It also has a Facebook page. You can look that up, and you know, Slut Walk stuff, you know, we have the Slut Walk has totally a Facebook page. So all those things, search in Facebook, look at these projects. They're awesome. Mazzoni Center, also mazzonicenter.org. We have our full website, and we also have a Facebook page and a Twitter as well. So Ooh. Yeah, check it out.
Very cool. Thank you so much, Keith. This totally. Has been amazing.
Awesome.
And thank you everybody for listening. So now it is time for your homework. And this is... Yes, exactly. This is the feature at the end of the Sex with Timmery podcast where I encourage you to try something that you might not otherwise do, just to expand your horizons, try out things that you might like that you haven't tried or that you forgot that you liked. So today's homework comes to you from our guest, Key Alexander.
Hey, y'all. I want you to get a piece of paper. I want you to write six boxes being race, class, sexuality, religion, ability, and age. And I want you to think about how your gender affects those other parts of your identity. So for example, we'll take class. We'll talk about socioeconomic class. So if someone is working class, their ability to find a job might be based on their gender because a lot of blue-collar jobs are gender-specific. So think about that. It's like, oh, I have to think about what job I can or cannot take. On the other side, if someone was trans and they were working class, they may not have access to services and may not be able to afford hormones or surgery or whatever they need to feel better about their transition. So that's an example of how your other parts of your identity can affect that. So you should go through and write down just a little note in each box about, you know, how might my gender affect this? And, you know, gender affects everybody no matter what your gender is and all that good stuff. So think about that. Sit with it. Think about it on the train. Think about it, you know, when you're standing in line and that person in front of you is taking a really long time. You think about that.
Time will go faster.
Totally.
It'll be great. All right. So as always, when you do your homework, we love to hear how it went. So you can email sexwithtimmery@gmail.com, comment it on the Facebook wall, etc. So thank you very much, Key, for that lovely homework.
Word.
And thank you, everyone. Do your homework. Hey, loyal Sex with Timmery listeners. We have something finally to pay you back. So you've been listening to us rant about sex, and we appreciate you so much that we have prizes and presents. So popporn.com has gifted us with a selection of lovely porn titles, and we are going to be giving them away to Sex with Timmery listeners who like Sex with Timmery on Facebook. So very easily, you can enter to win new porn, probably on a weekly basis or so. We're going to be giving a free one away. So facebook.com/sexwithtimmery, or just search sex with T-I-M-A-R-E-E, and you should like it. And if you are already, if you've already liked it, you're already entered. But if you add in, now you are entered. And if you interact on the wall for Sex with Timmery, you'll also be given additional entries for liking things, commenting on articles, etc., writing on the wall, whatever. So enter now by liking Sex with Timmery on Facebook or interacting with the Facebook wall, Sex with Timmery. So thank you for listening and enjoy. Thank you for listening to Sex with Timmery. Please check out more from sexwithtimmery.com, where Monday through Friday there's new content, including polls, weekly sex columns, and Friday sex links. And if you have any questions, comments, or violent reactions, please email them to sexwithtimmery@gmail.com. That's sexwithtimmery@gmail.com. And thank you.